is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. No surprise. It's another ridiculously hot day. First day of high school football in the state of Alabama. Yeah, this is just unbelievably hot weather for football to be played tonight. And there's a huge game over in Phoenix City. I know our buddy Jason Caldwell is going to go over there. He said he's going to be down on the field where it'll probably be 120 degrees at kickoff.
The flag football team at Central, which is back-to-back defending national champions, are playing right now.
Wow.
Yeah, they're playing right now. They're playing Montgomery Catholic to open their season
right now. At least they're not wearing pads.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know. Still pretty rough, but yeah. Yeah, yeah, at least they
have
to deal with all
the
that.
Hottest. This is the hottest time of day. So, yeah, you know, if you have to be outside, try to get your work done early or late.
Yep.
But yes, this is – a lot of people say, you know, they don't want to be out at noon, and it's bad enough at noon, but it's worse, like from – 2 to 4.
Yeah, it feels like the sun's like right on top of you the whole time. Yeah, it's pretty brutal, and I think Auburn be pretty fortunate that they had an off day today, because like today there've been a couple of days this week where it's just been like ridiculously hot. Right?
I mean, really, it's like stepping into the oven and the oven's on, you know, about as hot as like at 500 degrees or something like that. It's crazy.
According to AccuWeather, the real feel in Auburn, Alabama right now is 110.
110.
Yeah, and it's 4 o'clock. Yeah. That's the other thing. It's 4 o'clock. Like,
well, I mean,
the
like
sun should be going down a little bit.
It'll start cooling off in a little while, but not much.
But still.
Not much. I spent a few minutes with Wimp Sanderson and Wimp and Barry Sanderson on Wednesday. Isn't I hear James Spann talking about a cooling trend coming for Birmingham and Tuscaloosa Friday and Saturday, when it's only going to – the highs are going to be in the mid-90s.
There you go.
It's like, that's a cooling trend?
Yep.
Mid-90s.
We're heading in the right direction.
Oh, man. That's Justin Ferguson that you're hearing here alongside. Ferg, of course, from the Auburn Observer. Bill and Justin here with Drew at the controls. A day after Auburn's final full scrimmage here of the preseason camp, we'll get Justin's thoughts on what he's picked up. How you felt about Alex Golish was in a much better mood. Yeah. Although, I said it last week. I didn't think he was terribly upset after the first one. He just knew there were some things that needed to be cleaned up. And he felt pretty good about them doing that yesterday.
Yeah, and the real negatives yesterday are stuff that's just like I don't think is necessarily going to get fixed overnight. And
no kidding.
It's just a function of having a young and new team. And so, but to hear like, hey, stuff from the first scrimmage that you feel like you could clean up, they did. The tackling being a lot better and just
he said he was really proud of the tackling.
Yeah, and it's just. I think they had a really good day yesterday, and you're in a good spot that these last two practices of camp before you go into an extended game week starting next week, you can really, really focus on the situational stuff, because it's the time that you're going to work on yourself. Try to get as good as you can at that, like get as much work as you can, so that by the time you hit next week, you're already prepping for Baylor and it's ready to roll. So I think they got a lot accomplished in this fall camp, obviously. But to be able to walk out of – that second scrimmage and not have this like big glaring like, oh gosh, we couldn't do this or we didn't do this right. Just kind of more of like, you know what, we're still learning how to play situational football together as a new team. Okay, well, you keep repping that, working that, and then, you know, that stuff's gonna kind of figure itself out over the course of the early season.
Yeah, and Alex Golish hasn't shied away from telling you what he thinks and you feel like he's being really straight with you. A lot of times coaches will say, well, you know, we've got a long way to go. For the last few years, it's been wait until we get everybody in here. We're not hearing that from Alex Golish. As a matter of fact, he's saying this team's got some talent.
Teams got talent. It's just going to be how they get executed. And I think anybody who watched Auburn football play the last couple of years especially knows that talent alone is not going to save you.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think it's just a very realistic way of looking at this team and where they're at right now. I think Golish has, you know, he's one of those guys that's like, you know, we know he has a plan and he's got a vision and all that, but he's very much a do the best you can right now with what you've got, and then we will – and then do it again, and then do it again, and like
every day,
working on right now, working on what's going on right now. Be the best you can be right now, and not feel like you have to wait, or you're making excuses, or you've got like it's all about that. So when you hear yesterday at the scrimmage, it's like, hey, we felt like pretty much every position group had good moments and positives. Yeah. Always stuff to work on. You're always gonna find that. But like, I was talking to Nathan King at 247. He did the podcast with me this morning. Dan was busy with some Alabama State stuff last night. We were talking about how one of the things I think that Golish does a really, really good job of is when coaches say that, like, they don't have goals, they have standards, that can kind of be coach speaking and that can kind of sound cliche, but I think you can see it and hear it in the way he talks about certain guys, like Jarrett Smith being one of them, or like when I asked about Keyshawn Singleton, where it's like, he knows you're better than what you're putting out, or he knows how much better you can be.
What he expects from you.
Like and pushing you to that. Not like, okay, you know, what's that going to look like in week one against Baylor, or what's that going to look like by the end of the season? It's more of like, okay, right now I know you can do more. And if you keep and if you make doing more and being your best a habit, it's going to be – that's what you're going to be better off and let down the line. And so I think there's a lot to that. And he's very realistic about some of these guys. Like, you know, it's some of these guys, like, you know, you can tell, hey, they're doing the best they can. You know, they're filling in a role. They're filling in a need right now. But I think there's several guys on this team where he sees the talent and the upside and the potential and say, okay, if we can get you to keep climbing, it could be really, really good. And he talked about that with Singleton. And I think Jarrett Smith's the one on defense who you're hearing the most about.
Oh, yeah, and there's no question. And then, I mean, we heard yesterday, and one of the things that really struck a chord is he'll praise somebody when they do well, and he'll let you know if they're not doing well. He was straight up a Saint Farrier. He goes, he's inconsistent. When he's good, he's really, really good. When he's not, but that tells you he thinks he can be pretty good. And he did sort of the same thing with Bryson Washington. I thought it was great when he said, I'm not ready to say I'm proud of him yet. You know, but he's doing better.
Yeah, no, and to hear him say, hey, he's looking like the dude he was, the dude he was at Baylor. Well, go back and look. When he was at Baylor, he was one of the best running backs in the Big 12.
Right.
And, like, that's exactly what Auburn wanted when they got him. The Farrier thing's really interesting because there was a video that Auburn posted yesterday afternoon, like early evening, and it's one of those things that they do, you know, a lot of teams do this now on social media, where, like, you'll walk off the field at a practice or something like that, and you'll walk by a camera, and they'll have, like, a sign saying, like, hey, answer this question into the camera, and it's just an easy way to get content. And this one was, name a teammate who's had a really good, like, who you think's been awesome here in fall camp, like, who's doing really, really well. And, like, half the dudes on defense said Saint Farrier. And it's, like, talking about him and all that. And it's, like, so, again, guy who's clearly playing well,
right,
doing really well. But you want more.
Well, you want it every day, yeah. and
you don't feel like a dude scraping his ceiling when he's playing really well. Like some of these guys, you hear about some of these guys like further down on the depth chart really standing out. It's like, okay, that's probably the most you can expect out of him. Maybe you're getting a little bit more. It's certain guys. It's the consistency, right? When you hear about a guy like Malik Autry or Jordan Crawford, you know, it's like, we like what they got. Just need him to be a little bit more consistent. Got to grow up and do stuff like that. You heard that about these receivers. And lo and behold, these first two scrimmages, I think the story of the first two scrimmages for Auburn is this passing game is clicking, and it's where they really want them to be at this point. And if you're an Auburn fan, you should be pretty excited about that because that is the one thing this team has lacked the most, really for the better part of the last decade, but especially the last few years.
And against this defense, they've come up with some big plays.
Big plays. Keyshawn Singleton playing really, really well. Jeremiah Coggs played well.
Chaz Nimrod
continues to be really good. And then you know, like, Christian Neptune's getting healthier, making plays. Sean Spencer continues to be a guy that pops up, and so you know your tight ends are doing well in the passing game. Your running backs are getting more involved in the passing game as well. So, you know, I think that's the big thing for Auburn right now. And you know, every time you turn around, it's Byron Brown's just been really, really good. So like that's the thing is like when you go hire Alex Golish, and say, hey, here's your track record on the offensive side of the ball, especially in the passing game. We want that. We need that. This is what we've been lacking. And you bring it in. And when you bring it in, knowing he could take a lot of what it was, like literally the people involved at USF and plug it in, this is why you do it. This is why you want to be in the spot. We'll see how it looks at the beginning of the season. But I would say, I don't know. I can't think of, and I don't want to be like recency biased or be a prisoner of the moment here, but like I don't know the last time I have heard more confidence in an Auburn passing attack at this point in the August. It's been a while.
You're right. Maybe
Jarrett Stidham's second year.
Maybe
just because you had pieces coming back from that unit, right? Like and you know, maybe I mean if it's before that, and again it was a different offense, but maybe you know the steps forward that Nick Marshall made in 14. Like coming off of that really good
year. I still don't know that the expectation was it was going to be a prolific passing offense or a big strike.
It might be that Jarrett offense, mm-hmm. Darius Slayton, you know, coming back and all that. So, like, it might be that. You have, you know, Nathan made this point. And I think
my goodness, I mean, it might be Brandon Cox.
Well, Dan was saying this on our show not too long ago, and it was like the big difference that he has gotten is – there's no questions about who the quarterback is and how confident they feel about the quarterback. And it feels like for the better part of the last decade, you have hit you in some form
even
or fashion.
Even though sometimes you felt like there shouldn't be a question.
Yeah. Or about like the they were bringing a guy back, but it's like, how is he going to do? You know,
I mean, Bo's sophomore year was crazy. It's like, you're going to question. Yes.
The second year.
It was his junior year.
Yeah. His junior year.
Brian Harsin's.
Yeah, he didn't really have a preseason in his sophomore year. You know, Peyton Thorne coming back, there was a lot of question marks about it. And that offense ended up putting up big plays but couldn't finish drives.
Right.
And that ended up being their big concern. So it's just like it's why you go out and do that. It's why you go out and go – you hire Brian – you don't hire Alex Golish to just because you can get 1 year Byron Brown, but it is a heck of a bonus.
No, you're absolutely right. To get him and all the other pieces that come in.
When you're talking about setting the tone, when you're talking about setting the foundation, providing that proof of concept, that's what you want. And so I think for me, you know, I had somebody ask me earlier today on a radio hit, like, what is your big takeaway from camp so far, or at least as it's wrapping up? And I would say, without a shadow of a doubt for me, it is we have heard about two scrimmages where the passing game has been really good. And it's like, it's been a while since you've been able to kind of say that about an Auburn offense at this point in the preseason. You got to go out there and prove it on Saturdays. I'm not saying they're going to go throw for 500 against Baylor or anything like that, but they're in a very confident spot. That is a quarterback. That is a receiver group. That is an offense. That is a, you know, everything. It's just radiating confidence right now. And so I think because of that, there's all these different aspects of this team that are able to kind of like have some real excitement heading into the season.
And Alex Golish also said his corners. He thought the corners played well. So, I mean, that's good. The first thing some people would say was, whoa, that must be bad for the defense.
Yeah.
But, no, it sounds like the defense has had its moments as well.
It's a give and take, right? You know, we talked about it last week. Like,
you can't.
What's the magical number?
Everybody can't be
happy. What's the magical number of, like, this is the amount of yards and touchdowns and turnovers you can have and where you have a good – everyone can be happy in the scrimmage. That doesn't exist. I mean, I think this is a group of guys that – are playing with a good bit of confidence right now. And, you know, Nathan joked on our show, it's like, yeah, this is the scrimmage where people come out of it and say, well, we're going to win 10 games this year. Not going to say that. You're still, your issues are still your issues. Your deficiencies are still your deficiencies. However, I do think, you know, there are places around the SEC and there are places around the country where they're coming out of scrimmages with a lot more concern. Mm-hmm. And I think Auburn is not panicking about anything. They have issues, they have things they have to fix, and they have things to work on, but guess what? That's football. That's a team. That's year one, especially, with these guys. And so, I mean, I thought, you know, coming out of there, it was like, if you clean up the things you knew you could clean up and you know exactly what you need to work on coming off of it, you're in a really good situation. Keep guys healthy. I mean, you're in as good of a spot as you want to be in heading into, like, an extended game week getting ready for that Baylor.
All right, so let me ask you, because I said yesterday, and I said it before the scrimmage, but I feel even stronger about it after hearing Alex Golish yesterday. I can't help but be more optimistic about this team
mm-hmm.
than I was heading into fall camp. I
sure.
mean, I feel like this has been a camp where a lot of questions have been answered.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there hasn't been the, well, boy, we came in worrying about, is Stanton Ramil going to be able to play? Are we going to have any depth on the offensive line? Boy, with when Ty Buster is out, I don't know if that offensive line is going to be able to get together
how are the edge rushers going to do, how the corners going to hold up.
I mean,
right?
I feel like the coaches and players all seem to feel like they're progressing. They're getting better.
Yeah.
And I think, I feel better than I did. I felt like this team, coming into fall camp, I felt like this team ought to be better, ought to have a better record.
Oh, for sure.
Than last year. Now I think they've got a chance to be better than just okay.
That might be my take on it. Like, I don't know if anything I've heard or seen in fall camp is going to make me come off the line of like, this is probably a 7-5 team, maybe 8-4, maybe 6-6, like in that ballpark. But I will say them being, I would say at some points they had a schedule in mm-hmm. some areas on offense.
I think they are.
Yeah, on offense. I think that has not changed my expectation of them. I think it changes the ceiling. I think that, like, man, if it clicks and if everything gets rolling, you feel like it will be less surprising if this team really catches fire and we look up and we're like, wow, this team won 9 ball games this year. Well, this team won 10 ball games. Like, I think that's the far off, stretch
absolutely.
Of the ceiling. But like, it feels a little more realistic than it did coming in.
I think they're closer to being able to do that with they win a big ball game and they could click and go on a decent roll. And now, October's you're not going to just roll through October.
No, but like, you have an opportunity right now. And the way the schedule is set up, where if you win your first few games mm-hmm. and you hit that first road game against Tennessee with some momentum, it's like, all right, what happens there? And then you get an off week, then you play Georgia. Georgia will be coming right off of playing Alabama. Like,
right,
what does that look like? And I think Auburn just is feeling in a spot. You don't want to boil it all down to one position, but it is the most important position in football. I look around the SEC right now, and there are so many teams that are just like, trying to figure out who is going to be their guy at quarterback or how they feel about the situation. And it feels like in the league there have been more battles going into fall, like going deep into fall camp, than there have been in a while. Meanwhile, Auburn, it was like you knew who your starting quarterback was mm-hmm. in like December.
Oh, you knew, as soon as he was as soon as he announced he was coming to Auburn.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, that feels like a pretty good one. So
he hasn't done anything to make people question that.
Right. Florida's in a situation right now. Like, take for example, the first three teams you play in the SEC this year. Florida is in a situation right now where it's like, they like Aaron Filo, but there's another guy that may be a little bit more talented, doesn't know the scale. Like, they are in a real kind of pickle mm-hmm. about that. Vanderbilt could be starting a true freshman.
Right.
And then
Tennessee's got
two freshmen at this point, and it's going to be very interesting to see how it all goes. Meanwhile, it's like, yes, he hadn't done it in the SEC. Yes, he hasn't done it at Auburn yet, but this dude is proven in this offense. And I keep saying it to the point where quarterback, offensive coordinator, head coach, that trio coming together for a fourth year together. Only 4 teams in college football have that, and Auburn's one of them. Mm. The other ones are Notre Dame, Georgia, and Texas. That's exactly the company you want to keep when you talk about having like what the ceiling of your quarterback play could be. Like, that having that stability and that continuity is huge. It's beyond huge for these guys.
No question about that. We're just underway here on the Thursday Drive. Love for you to join in. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390. Bill and Justin with you here on the Thursday Drive.
We're even online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, along with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio, Drew at the controls. And the insanity continues in college athletics with a decision yesterday that I can't comprehend. I understand why players that were left out, who had a fifth year, who would have had a fifth year under the new rule, but used up their fourth year last year, would be upset and want to be able to gain that fifth year back. But yesterday, a judge granting a TRO, allowing players who have signed NFL contracts and are in NFL training camps to be able to come back to college, Justin. I can't fathom how a judge would say that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes no sense to me that we're at this point. I'm also of the opinion that, like, and I know Auburn just got Trey Taylor
right.
this way, you know, and just, you know, in basketball picked up a guy as well. But, like, I feel like you got to come to a point where it's like, all right, your roster's kind of locked right now. Like, this is,
I mean,
this
we
is
are, we're 2 weeks away from the start of the season, yeah. and a week away from, you know, from,
and I guess like pro teams can sign free agents at any moment. So I guess that's probably a little hypocritical, but like, it is crazy to think like, yep, all right, we're just going to go ahead and bring somebody in right now and, you know, have that kind of, you know, have that kind of eligibility thing just kind of looming over it. I also find it interesting. Did you see the R.J. Lewis thing today?
No.
So LSU is trying to get R.J. Lewis eligible, and obviously R.J. Right. Lewis, you know, went through the whole thing with the NBA and all that. Greg Sankey has put in, you know, as part of the, like, whatever it is, to argue against it, much like they did with Bediako at Alabama. Like, I can't stress this enough. LSU needs R.J. Lewis to play this year.
Oh,
otherwise,
right.
they are in major trouble. Mm-hmm. And the SEC commissioner is stepping in again and having to, all right, we got to do something about this. Like, there's got to be a line drawn here. And so I think it is kind of crazy that, like, we're going to continue to do this over and over and over again until there are some lines drawn. And obviously, those lines are not going to be drawn anytime soon.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it is one of those things where it is such a cutthroat, results-oriented business at this point that even if you're in your heart of hearts, if you're a coach or you're an AD or you're any of these people involved in these situations, even if you're in your heart of hearts, you think, yeah, I don't love that this is an option. I don't love that, like, this is how it's gotten. But you don't want to be – you don't want to be the one who doesn't take advantage of it and it costs you, right? Like, that's the thing. That's the thing.
That's true.
People aren't talking about.
You don't want anyone that you're facing to take advantage
right.
of it at
and,
your
and
expense.
You not. Yeah, and yeah, and you want to. You don't want to hold the line and say, you know what, we don't believe in this. And it's like, okay, you don't believe in it, and then you go, and that guy, you know, rips you up in a game. And that affects your career. That affects your season. It affects your career if you're a coach. Like, I get why teams are doing that. Even if you think that this is all ridiculous, like
right.
until it is not.
Until you can't,
no.
you better.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Is like back in the day, you know, or I guess it's like with anything now with like NIL and like how there are no rules there. But like, you know, back in the day with recruiting, like cheating to recruit, it's like. Sure, there's a lot of people say, yeah, we shouldn't do that, but like everyone else is doing it. Like, so why?
Yeah, why are we going to penalize ourselves?
Why are we going to handicap ourselves for that? So I think that's one of the things about all of this. It's like, it is ridiculous, but it's like, I completely understand. I really understand why players are doing this. Like, I really get it. Like, I think it gets ridiculous once you're getting to like the eighth and ninth year and like all that, but like this fifth year thing.
I understand.
Yeah, I can see that. And like,
still, I mean, you're in training camp. Jack Pyburn had 2 sacks last week.
Yeah.
He had 2 sacks in a preseason game.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know he wasn't drafted, and he probably could make more money. And I see a report this afternoon that Ole Miss is one of the
sure. –
Ole Miss has been in contact with Jack
sure.
Pyburn. And, of course, hey, there are 3 former Ole Miss players that are among the 16 that were granted that TRO. So Ole Miss is looking at adding 4, you know, 4 players here
yeah.
as they head into the season in
yeah.
a couple of weeks.
And if you're not – yeah, I mean, somebody's going to end up doing it. So
oh, you know it.
And so it's, again, like there was a point in time, I'm sure, where it's like, do we really need – like in basketball, do these guys who are European pros, should they be able to play college basketball? Man, I don't know. I know that they can. I know there's nothing stopping them right now, so why not? You know? Like, if you're
– well, they at least haven't been in college. You know?
At least, yes. Yes.
I mean, that's one thing
but
that
it's
I can still, at least
But it's
say.
Still one of those things where it's like, you know.
I can see where the NCAA would go, well, it, depending on their age and you know, they don't have any college backgrounds.
No. So. I mean, look, at Auburn's taking full advantage of Montez.
Montez
is
question.
Very old, like to the point where
well, he's 24.
But it's like to the point where it was kind of for
a first-year college player, yes.
Yeah, for it's like where it's kind of like, we got to see if he's going to be eligible or, like, if he's
going
to get in there.
So, hey, what's going on? Why is the NCAA dragging their feet on this?
I don't know. I think maybe the thought is that that you still have time. Like
oh yeah, because basketball season's not about to start yet.
I think there's just so much stuff going on.
I guess so.
With all these other sports that are like when you have what just happened in football happening right now, I can see that like that's kind of kicking the can.
Yeah,
down
take a back burner. Yeah. I mean, till we try. Or
like I would imagine within the next month or two, they definitely have to figure it out. But again, it's one of those things where people are like, "Oh, you know, Matzus isn't eligible and Narcisse isn't eligible," and like there are people out there. That sounds really bad. And it's look, if they're not eligible, any high major team in the country is about to get hit hard something.
An awful lot of them.
So, like, again, like, I wouldn't panic. It's just, it's one of those weird things where they're all just kind of looking around. And I wouldn't be surprised if the SEC or, you know, just anything is like in good, like, when you talk about these friendlies or these overseas trips, like, yeah, don't play them. Like, don't, just in case. Like, you know, I think that was kind of the thing. But, because when Auburn did it, it was like, okay, there's really nothing holding them back. You know, these games don't count. And then when you see Arkansas doing the exact same thing, you're like, okay, well, you know, there's something going on there. And Arkansas, not to take anything away, I think Montez and Narcisse are both going to be really key players for Auburn this season. But Arkansas didn't do it. That Arkansas kid's going to be like one of the best players in the SEC this year. Like, he is like the guy for them. So, yeah, it's just. It's crazy, and you know, until any of those lines are drawn, it's just going to be more of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, what's interesting is that Sankey had sent that affidavit to the Louisiana judge last week, and then the judge apparently went, "That's okay. I'm still going to grant it." So, I mean, I don't know what's going to come of that. I mean, it just came out today that Sankey had tried to convince the judge not to do it, but that was before the judge went ahead and made his decision. So. I don't know. I mean, the NCAA can try to fight this. It doesn't look good for their track record in court, Justin. Mm-hmm. So there's no telling. I mean, as NFL teams start to cut down, I would think anybody who's got that fifth year is going to be fair game for teams looking for help. And if you have a big injury somewhere, they'll probably go out and get those. Now, will these guys? Will they be held to that the same thing of either graduating or being in the transfer portal?
I have no idea.
I have a feeling that's going to be challenged too.
Yeah, I mean, that I don't know. It's such a mess.
Oh, it is.
And it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, I get it. I get why teams are doing it. And like, if you can make it, but like at this point, like, there's only so much. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to bring this guy in and be like, all right, how much are you actually going to be able to help us out right now?
Well, I mean, I was looking at the Ole Miss schedule. Say Jack Pyburn goes to Ole Miss. Well, he misses the Louisville game, but they get the Charlotte game or something to get him ready for LSU. You know?
Right. Yeah, it's just like it is. It's really crazy. It's just.
Yeah.
I hate that this is at that point.
The good thing is if they can just stick with a 5-for-5 after this year, then –
That's such an easy thing to figure out. Yeah, and that's such an easy one to figure out without the red shirts, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Just 5-for-5. Like, just go for it.
But the precedent would then be set for anybody who leaves early and things don't work out in the NFL. Like, okay, can I come back now? I'm planning on coming back.
I guess so. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's probably the next step.
Mm-hmm.
Man. All right, we'd love to hear from you. Anything on your mind sports-wise, 334-321-1390. We'll hit the bottom of the hour break. Here on the Thursday Drive.
AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
That news. Welcome back to the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Taking your calls, questions, comments, 334-321-1390. Who have we got, Drew?
John.
John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, guys, how y'all doing?
Doing good, man.
I always want to thank my friends at Skybar for sponsoring the hotline.
Oh, absolutely. I keep apologizing. I keep meaning to make it on Thursday mornings, but, man, it's tough for an old retired guy to just get up.
We had old number 99 Shannon Subtle show up today.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but I got a question. Have y'all talked this week, or is it on one of those shows doing a preview of the Auburn High Festival game?
No, I haven't really talked much about it. I mean, I do know. I mean, Auburn High is loaded again. Kaysen Myers is, really primed for an outstanding season, and that offense. Going to be fun.
I'm not covering high school as much this season, but I do know one thing about a couple things about Auburn High. Number one, the Kaysen Myers thing. When you bring back a starting quarterback at high school at any point in time, you are so far ahead of the curve, I think, for teams. So that is a huge reason for a lot of excitement around that team.
Well,
and then
I heard Dr. Rob Pate this morning on show out of Birmingham say that Kaysen Myers has already committed to Arkansas.
Yes, indeed he has. Yeah, he's been committed to them for a while.
Yeah, he's a great young player.
I did not think he was as big, but I just looked him up. They got him listed as being like 6'3". I didn't think he was that tall.
No, he's pretty good size, John.
Well,
I'll tell you who else is pretty good size that's got some talent, and that is Auburn University's cornerbacks coach, DeMarcus Van Dyke's got a sophomore son who is 6'4" corner,
and he is a corner. That's the, you know, he's a really good athlete, and we're going to put him there. No, yep. He is a pure corner, super
basketball?
Impressive. I don't know. I think he's just a football guy.
Yeah, I think he is a football guy. I mean, because Jason said he watched him against Prattville, against their stud receiver who's committed to Auburn, and said it was a great matchup, one of the better matchups he's seen.
He's a sophomore.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's a top 25 player.
I think he might need to try to keep in shape during the offseason and try a little bit.
Yeah, Chris ought to work on that.
Coach Brand would take that in a heartbeat.
All right. Well, that's really all I had. Game to be on Wings again this year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And who's doing it with Rob?
Jack Hudden is taking
great.
Over. Yeah. Yeah, well, Jack will do an excellent job.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, War Eagle, guys, and I'll listen to Auburn High tomorrow night. Thanks.
All right, John. Good hearing from you, man.
Yeah, Hewitt tomorrow night, always a big matchup, you know, or always a big game whenever you have to play a team like that.
I don't think we even mentioned him when I said there's a huge ball game tonight.
Mm-hmm.
It's Central. Central's hosting Thompson tonight over in Phoenix City.
Yep, it's always a big, like anytime this Birmingham team's come down here.
Well, I mean, that's like, Auburn and Opelika have popped in there at times, but I mean, it's those are two teams you generally think have got a great shot of playing for the title, for the state title.
Yeah,
6A this year, not 7A.
Yeah, I'm still wrapping.
Yeah, I messed
still
up yesterday.
Wrapping.
I'd forgotten about that.
I'm
yesterday.
Still wrapping my mind around all those changes. Again, like I'm not stringing, at least for right now, with, you know, covering high school football as much, but like it is a whirlwind right now. So yeah, Hewitt's gonna be interesting. I think Hewitt lost a decent amount of guys from their team last season, mm-hmm. so it'll be interesting to see.
Yes, I don't know as much about
they're
that.
Having to break in, like, from what I had heard earlier this week. So yeah, Auburn getting to get them tomorrow night. It's fun. I mean, you love these kind of like open the season with a heavyweight fight. You love those high school, because again,
like Keith Etheridge, doesn't mind that. Now look, Auburn has trouble finding teams anyway.
Yeah, especially out of region. Yeah,
how about next week? Drew, Auburn's headed down to yours and Dan's old stomping grounds, Chocktahatchee, next week.
Yeah, it's they played those teams for Miami for a while. They play IMG, like they've had to bounce around for it. But yeah, those heavyweight fights, and again, you know, we talk about this, like, you know, it would be interesting with Baylor, Auburn getting to play Baylor, and just, you know, University getting to play Baylor, and like how big that is. And you hear about it all the time, though, where it's like when you have a big game, week one, your first game being a big game, that whole preseason just gets a little bit more, more juice to it than, you know, tougher to find these in high school. But like when you're playing like what would be the equivalent of a paycheck game in week one, where you're like, all right, you know, you're going to probably go up there and tune it up and take care of business. A little different when Hewitt's coming down or when Thompson's coming down. Oh, yeah. Those big week one matchups.
And that sort of reminds me of a call we got a couple of days ago. It was talking about the Auburn Baylor game and talk of other games sort of like that, NIL type games.
Yeah.
Wondering, you know, could we eventually see bowl games sort of shift to the beginning of the year.
I love that idea.
I mean, I thought that is a great idea. There'd be so much more interest in matchups, cross conference, whatever, yeah, intersectional matchups there to open the season at a certain site where you're playing for NIL. You know, there'd be incentive for the players to play. You wouldn't have to worry about them opting out, mm-hmm, when it's their potential money.
And you're not having to worry about guys opting out with the transfers or coaching changes or anything like that. Yeah, that was about, gosh, probably about a decade ago I first heard somebody say, like, hey, what if we move bowl games,
yeah,
to the beginning when the playoffs started kind of catching fire? So I love that idea. I think it would be really, really cool that, you know, once you're done with your regular season, you know, you go into the playoff if you're in the playoff. And if,
right,
you're not in the playoff,
get ready for next year.
And even if you are in the playoff, you can go ahead and set up a big high-profile game in week one. It would be a lot of fun. That'd be a cool way to do it. I do, again, like this matchup being what it is. I know Auburn used this money for the roster and all that, and NIL, and that stuff's important. You know, the basketball team's going all over the world, and
right,
you get ready for the preseason. The exhibitions from, you know, we know one, and I've heard about another that is going to be really interesting if it all comes to fruition. But you know, just to get money, just to get, you know, mm-hmm, these opportunities. Initially, when Auburn signed that deal with Notre Dame, before that became a thing, there was a rumor that was going to be like that as well, that they were going to play kind of like how they do it in basketball, where you play two neutral site games kind of close,
right,
to one another. Instead, you know, as it stands right now, and I don't think this is going to change, hopefully it won't change.
Home and home.
True home and home. Right. So I like that.
Oh, yeah, I want to go to South Bend.
Yeah, absolutely. you know, and I can't remember all, like, I think Auburn's still got Miami on the schedule, but like I think so much of that's going to change here in the near future. But yeah, that Notre Dame series, there was talk. I had heard last year that Auburn and Notre Dame were talking about a series, and one of the things that was pitched was that Auburn would have played Notre Dame in Chicago.
That's
or
exactly what I was thinking.
It was either Chicago or Lambeau. It was okay. Those two, and then they had wanted Auburn and Notre Dame to play at the new Titan Stadium when that opened.
Oh, okay. I was going to Atlanta, Nashville. Yeah.
That obviously fell by the wayside, I believe, obviously, with the schedule. I think the Titans' new stadium opens in 2 years or something like that. So I don't know if the timing would have worked out perfectly, mm-hmm, there. But instead, you know, we get a true home and home, which should be the case.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those are a lot more fun for sure.
Yeah, but that
I mean, going to Baylor last year was fun. That was a very fun trip. It was hot as blazes, mm-hmm, but you know, it was a really fun trip. I hate that Auburn's not going to open the Alex Golish era with
at home
game,
right?
But you know, it will feel crowd wise, it'll feel as close to a home
Auburn,
game. As
Auburn's going to have 90% of the crowd,
and I hope you know, different events run it different ways. I hope that this is one of those neutral site games where it does kind of
feel like a home,
or like not as much like you're playing in an NFL stadium.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Been to some of those.
Oh, you're right.
Been to some of those. That Auburn-Oregon game in Dallas was very corporate. And like anything that happens in AT&T Stadium. Mm-hmm. But like that, that one I was not a big fan of. So maybe this one will be a little bit different.
Yeah. I hope so. But yeah, I thought that call was really spot on. And that'd be a whole lot more fun for so many teams. And I understand, look, ESPN. They want the inventory, and they need something to be running. My goodness, when I look up and I see pop darts and stuff like that on the air, now I feel like it's the old days, the early days of ESPN or something. It's like, come on, there's something else you can show. We'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final segment here of hour number one. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, while we get a chance, talk a little bit about what all you've got there at the Observer. Continue. I mean, just tons and tons of info Look forward to it, you know, every day.
Yeah.
You know, and when I wake up, there's usually something there in my email every day.
Yeah, and we've been doing a lot of stuff with practice, you know, being the schedule it is. We've been doing a lot of stuff in the afternoon, which has been pretty cool to just be able to just drop it as soon as we get it. So, yeah, at the Observer this week, full scrimmage breakdown from yesterday, everything we heard from that. Got practice notes from earlier this week as well. I did a rundown of the players, I think, that, you know, in my opinion, have stood out the most during fall camp. You can check that out. I mentioned earlier, Nathan King and I did a podcast this morning. You can check out wherever you listen to your podcast. We've got that up. And then tomorrow we'll go to practice, and I'll have something right after the second to last practice of fall camp, which we just literally just got an email that it's going to be a little bit earlier tomorrow than
I didn't expect. I hadn't checked my email since we came on.
They're going to start it a little bit earlier tomorrow, so it's like 10 o'clock, 10:20.
Oh, I'm not going to be able to get the grass cut. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking I'll get up early, I'll cut the grass, take a shower, I'll get over there.
I appreciate the earlier start, though. I do like the earlier start. And then, you know, obviously next week we really get into the swing of things with that extended game week, so – you know, mailbag should be back next week and at its normal time. We'll do whatever practice. Like, I know next Monday we get Gullish and the two coordinators. I believe we have a practice viewing window and player interviews on Tuesday, and that's going to kind of be the pattern during the season as well. So a lot of stuff for the Observer. Sign up there. And everything we, as Bill was saying, everything you get drops straight in your inbox. Most of the time early in the morning, but like here in fall camp, you've been looking down at lunch.
When news comes out midday.
Yeah, it's like, yesterday we talked to Alex Gullish after the scrimmage. That was about at noon. And then by 2 o'clock, I had, you know, a ton of stuff out there from the scrimmage. And we get a lot. And that's what I appreciate about this is like we get to get a lot of access with this. There's a lot of stuff to get and break down. And what we do at the Observer is, you know, we come out of a practice, we come out of a scrimmage, here's everything we got from it. You can read it in your email inbox, you can click it once. I'm not going to make you click on a bunch of different stories. So this has been perfect this time of year because, like, literally every practice video we get a ton of stuff from it. So it's been a lot of good stuff.
I said it yesterday, but I feel like Alex Gullish gives you more – he gives you more info than almost any coach that I've been around. I mean, you ask him a question, he'll give you name, and he'll tell you how they're doing, if they're doing better now, if they need to do better. I mean, he hardly ever leaves out anybody if you ask him about a position.
How about this? I know it hadn't been the case since I've been covering the team, and this is my fourth head coach, fifth technically. I was at the tail end of Chizik. Have you ever been around an offensive-minded head coach who can talk as in-depth about the defense?
No. Never.
And it's detailed. It is detailed.
He knows every play. He mentions, like I said, at any position, he mentions every player who's working there.
Mm-hmm. He'll
even give you the youngsters who aren't going to be in the playing rotation
right now. Scout team guys, yeah. And so – yeah,
he was talking about linebackers yesterday. I mean, you know, he mentioned every single one.
Yeah, he mentioned a walk-on running back yesterday.
He sure did.
Yeah,
sure did.
Just as a guy. Yeah, that you know, and I've heard some good things about him as well. But yeah, it's just that was the one thing that stood out to me is that when you talk about, like, you know, you hear it, but oh, this coach is detail oriented. It's like, this guy is detail oriented because I think obviously the offense is his area of expertise, and that's where he's got a lot of focus on it. And he trusts DJ Durkin to run the show on defense. But I think as locked in as he is on what's going on, there's a lot of that just comes naturally through. I go back to – I've been several times during fall camp where, you know, defense will be running, you know, that pursuit drill, or they'll just be doing something on their own, and he's over there watching and all that. You know, not every offensive-minded head coach does that because we've covered a few of them that – didn't really venture over to the defense that much, but he's got a pretty in-depth knowledge of him.
No, I mean, so it's been very enjoyable.
It's been a good camp, and I think for Auburn, it's like you've had a couple of major injuries, you've had a couple of issues.
Yeah, tough news about JJ Falk and a collarbone. I mean,
that's tough.
He's a guy that
he could have gotten in the rotation.
Oh, no doubt. He was going to be in the rotation.
He was going to be in the rotation. So, you know, it's going to put a little bit more pressure on some of those older guys to maybe do a little bit more. Some of these guys who have been a little bit behind.
Yeah, I thought Nate Johnson's a guy now that's got to step up a little
Chris
more.
Murray. And then it's like, okay, Is Joe Phillips ready to
yep.
stay healthy?
Jaquez Wilkes, the young guy.
Jaquez Wilkes, yeah, are those two guys that are really, make sense. And then again, I like the potential of throwing Darion Smith out there on early downs if you need to. Mm-hmm. He mentioned Cody Sigler as an option, and people are like, "Wow, Cody Sigler is like, yeah, no, he's twitchy enough to make that."
Oh yeah, and then that somebody like DeMarcus Riddick,
I love the idea, and we saw him a little bit earlier this week with the edges. Mm-hmm. I love that idea of him just coming off the corner and like. That's one of those guys where you put him out there on third down, and I think it could be really matchup-oriented, but I think you look at him and you find an offensive tackle and say, hey, buddy, can you move your feet? Can you stay in front of this guy? Can you get your hands on him and keep him out of there? Because he's going to be so much quicker than you. And when he was – his freshman year, if you go back and look, his freshman year – he got home on an absurd rate of blitz. Like when he would blitz, he was hitting the quarterback like almost every single time. And so that's a fun little play. Because you're probably not thinking about him as a starter. Maybe depending on Bryce Diaz, might not even be a top three linebacker. But I think what we saw in freshman year of DeMarcus Riddick, obviously didn't get to see it as much last year, but freshman year DeMarcus Riddick, what made him so special was he's like a Swiss Army knife. And you go back when he was at Chilton County, he played everywhere, like everywhere on that defense. And so that's where it gets really, really fun, where it's like you have your starters, you have your depth. Mm-hmm. You put a dude out there who can just do some stuff. And, like, depending on matchup, depending on situation, just turn him loose. And I think edge rushing is going to be a part of that.
And that's one of the things we were talking about a little yesterday, too, is the versatility and the flexibility that DJ Durkin has on defense. Yeah.
Especially
many guys that are working in multiple spots.
And especially if, like, we've seen a lot of – in these viewing windows, we've seen a lot of guys work at – those edge rushers work on dropping back, getting into coverage. And if you're – trusting the Deshaun Womack and the Jared Smiths of the world to drop back into coverage, then you can blitz more.
Somebody else is coming.
So when you start doing sims and stuff like that, and it gets really, really fun, because that's one of the other things we talk about with this defense this year, is that you're in the third year of DJ Durkin.
Yep. And a lot of the guys are
at least in their second year of it. Yeah. And so it is an advanced understanding of this defense of we can do more stuff because it's not just kind of the base. And you've heard it over and over again in fall camp. Anytime an offensive player talks about the defense, it says they will throw you any look at any given time. You got to be ready for it.
What was the word that was used to describe it by one of the – I don't remember. It was one of the players or one of the coaches. It's like it wasn't insanity, but it was something like that. It's it's a challenge. Music's playing. That means we're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. Love for you to join in. We're wide open in hour number two, which is coming up.
We're production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Tomorrow now, The Drive will be on location as well as on the line, both going to be over at Winter Timber Outdoors. They're celebrating their first anniversary this weekend. We were there when they first opened up. Man, what a great place. And we'll be back there tomorrow. Don Dunn and I will be over there tomorrow. So looking forward to that. If you get a chance, stop by and join us then. It's Bill and Justin here in the studio, and we'd love to hear from you. We've got a couple of callers on hold right now on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Got one line open, 334-321-1390. Let's get right to the phones, and J-Bag is up first. Hey, man, how's it going?
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. I appreciate what you do on the radio, giving us 7 hours of local sports talk radio every day. Thank you.
Glad I don't have to do 7, but yeah, it's fun.
I know. Hey, I just want to remind everybody that our last winning season was 2019 and that we are on our third head coach since then. and that we all can understand the hype and the social media presence that the athletic department puts out there and interviews galore, but let's all understand who we are, where we are, and where we want to be, and we are nowhere but in the ditch at the moment, and we have to climb ourselves out of it with all this new things that there are in college football, but let's all take a minute to remember who we used to be and want to be today. I appreciate it, fellas. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, J-Bag. I think it could be orange and blue glasses. I think Auburn's found either that Alex Golish and his bunch have got a tow
some
truck
promising
there.
Start.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a chance to get out. 2020 Auburn was 6-4.
Yeah, I'll say this at this point, and I like where he's coming from here because I think there needs to be some realism with it. Winning more games than you lose. That's the goal. That is progress. That is a step forward. When I hear people talk about, well, it'd be disappointing if you went X and X. I was like, no.
Heard people, it's disappointment if you go 7-5. Well, I mean, look, if Auburn isn't competitive in five games, they lose five games, they aren't competitive in those, then
sure,
it's,
but you
it's
gotta
not going to feel great,
sure,
but you'd still.
You got to think big picture.
I know.
Win more games than you lose. That's an attainable goal. And whatever else you can get past that this season, enjoy it, savor it. Because you're right, this is not something that's going to be able to just flip overnight, more than likely. And even then, in this day and age of college football, you can make that turnaround quicker.
Yes, you can.
But it's still the schedule you're playing. You know, right. I think about like when Indiana hired Kurt Cignetti and they made the playoff in year one. Go back and look at that schedule. They weren't playing what Auburn's schedule was this season. So, you know. Pump the brakes a little bit, but I think cautious optimism should be the order of the day for a lot of Auburn fans.
I think absolutely. And look, I mean, Auburn should have won more games the last couple of years than they did. If they can just get to the, if they can split the close games, Auburn hasn't been able to do that for years. You've got to be able to win some close games. If they win a close game or two, then it's going to give them more confidence, and they'll be able to do even better. But yeah, I understand where you're coming from, J-Bag. 334-321-1390. Jeremy is up next. Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, hey, guys. I want to thank your last caller for the good swift kicking the balls.
Never good, but yeah, gotcha.
I appreciate where he's coming from, but yeah, that was painful. Speaking of painful, are the Braves going to hold on?
I'm getting more nervous by the day.
I'm not concerned about them making the playoffs.
No, I just needed to win the. I said it yesterday. I was like, just win the division, please. The offense slumping like this again is really, really disappointing. I think the positive things is like we know what they're capable of when it does look good, but man, it is just another stretch right now. Where like today, it was just you got two RBI from Austin Riley. That was kind of it. So, yeah, it's just the pitching has been able to settle down for the most part, which
and
is
it's
a
been
good
amazing
sign.
Because I mean they've had to go through so many different guys.
But yeah, I need to heat back up in September with the bats. Otherwise, it's getting
well,
dicey.
They need to heat back up really quick. I'm afraid if they drop four out of the next six, like if they were to lose two out of three to the Brewers and then two out of three to the Dodgers, like just these next six games are massive.
Yeah. No, yeah. If you could split these next six, you'll take it and run for sure. But yeah, no, I don't know off the top of my head who the Phillies have next. I need to look that up. But yeah, no, I mean, and yes, the Phillies catching fire at this time when you're slumping again.
They're playing the Cardinals
this weekend,
starting this weekend. I don't know who they've got next week.
And then next week, I'm looking at it right now. They have the Mariners, who are falling off a cliff right now in Seattle. But yeah, so, yeah, I'm 100% with you there.
The best thing that I've had this fall camp and what little I've kept up with Auburn football is we're not having to sit around digesting what did he mean, what did their coach mean by this?
Did he really just say that?
there's none of that. You guys talk about attention to detail, at least publicly facing. He seems to hit all the notes.
Mm-hmm. It's a great way to put it.
Literally hitting all the notes, dragging the band in to play for the football team.
I can't think of anything he's missed. I mean, he keeps doing things that I go, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then why haven't we been doing that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Well, even like today, the thing that I heard today was situational awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And there is only so much of that you can coach. These guys have been playing football since they were, most of them since they were 8, 9, 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's only so much you can teach them to be aware that it's actually 3rd and 12, guys.
Yeah, there's 3rd and 12, and there's how much time, you know, whatever, where we are right in the ball game. And I think
that – especially at the speed they play on offense.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that goes along, too, with him talking so much about the players need to be the leaders. I mean, he's not shirking leadership or shying away from it, but he knows that they need to be the guys out there on the field taking charge, that mm-hmm. they can't just be depending on him or his coaches.
At the pace that they play, you need your guys to be locked in and leading the way, because you can't just be looking to the sidelines and trying to lean on too much.
That's my big thing. It's literally the same game that you guys played in middle school and in high school. And at some point, you're out there on the field. Like, all we can do, I remember being at a practice one time and listening to Coach Witt
mm-hmm.
yell at one of the linebackers about, that's a great job taking care of your responsibility, but there's only one football on the field. And, like, you've got to, at some point, you take care of your responsibility, but then you just got to play football.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's like, situational awareness, being aware of these things, like it, you can't spend enough time coaching it. It's something that the guys just have to have.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm hopeful that we're getting to a point where we see more of that on the football field.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That's a great point.
And that is something that Friday and Saturday is going to be that's going to be the really big focus, because once you get past that, it is now time to game plan for Baylor. So, yeah, no, I 100% agree there.
All right, guys.
Appreciate it, Jeremy.
Yeah, and to his point, like, I never played a down of organized football in my life, so I can't really speak to that from a football perspective. But I did play a lot of basketball, and that's kind of the other thing as well, where it's like at some point – you just got to go out there and play basketball. Like, it is, you can't look to the sideline. There ain't a perfect play call that can save you. There's not an adjustment. If some dude's up there busting your tail over and over again, you just got to step up and make a play at some point. You got to go out there and do it. And I think football, especially at that speed that they're playing, it's like, yeah, you know, at some point you just got to, like, you got to get it done. And, you know, and if you can't get it done, we can't have you out there.
Yeah, and then we got to find somebody that can.
Right. And so, that's the thing. It's like, you know, to that point, like, you are working on it. You can focus on it. There is only so much you can do, and there's only so much more time you can work on it. And I think Golish also said this yesterday, with such a young team and such a new team, there's only so far you can go. And I think once you get in it and the bullets start flying, you'll really do a lot of that learning then. There's only so much you can do in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
You get to figure it out early on. The good news for Auburn is They got home field advantage, or should, for the first several games of the year. They should be the favorite in the first couple of matchups for sure. And it's like you'll get some time to kind of work a lot of that out. But you can always work on it a little bit tighter. And he is a coach that believes very strongly in winning in the margins, winning in the key situations. They talk about red zone.
Well, he's had to. I mean, when you're at South Florida, and they were the kind of program they were when he got there.
Oh, yeah.
They had to do anything they could to have a chance.
Yeah, you have to out execute people at a specific point and just win there. And again, you go back to red zone. It's Auburn and Northwestern, you could say, have been the two worst red zone offenses in college football over the last 2 years. Like, no one has been as bad as they have been. Scoring touchdowns less than 50% of the time you get in the red zone, only two teams have done that back-to-back years, is Auburn and Northwestern.
I didn't realize that. I knew it was bad.
Northwestern was pretty bad last year, but 2 years ago they made a bowl game at least. This is the thing right there, where it's like, when you lose so many games by a single possession, and you have talent, and you have opportunities, and it's just – what can you do where on Saturday, what is the handful of plays that are going to swing a game? That are going to what's that one red zone trip? What's that one possession? What's that one moment that's going to change anything? And you got to be ready for it. And it can't be as where I think Auburn fell into problems with a lot of times on offense over the last couple of years, where it's you look into the sidelines and it's just like you're expecting a miracle, or it's like you got everything. You just got to go.
Or you feel like you've got one option. You try to get the ball to Cam. Get the ball up, throw it up to Cam.
We got to call the perfect play call. When I wrote before fall camp started about how good Alex Golish's teams have been in the red zone on offense, one of the things that I really, really like about them is when they get into the red zone, it field gets condensed, everything gets more condensed, but they don't change who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They will continue to go hammer down. They will continue to play between plays like there's still 80 more yards to go get, because that pace plays. They talked about it yesterday. You get to that 8th, 10th, 12th, 14th play of the drive, and you're playing that fast. That defense is worn out, and it's no longer, let's get the perfect play call in there.
Keep them on their heels. It's much better. It's like they're tired, they're worn out. Go ahead and bury them.
I've said it before. There is I've mentioned it a few times. You go back and you can check out the story of the Observer, but there's a play last season where South Florida beats North Texas in this like crazy good shootout, and it's in the second quarter, I believe, or late first quarter, early second quarter, and USF has a 4th and 3. And just outside the red zone, and they go for it. And Byron Brown takes it, gets the first down, gets a chunk play out of it. And he gets to the line, and they snap it in 8 seconds, and North Texas is not even looking. They're looking around. They're trying to figure it out, and USF's already on the ball. Boom, go. Byron Brown just walks into the end zone off it. And it's like that's the kind of stuff where it's like that's winning in the margins. But to be able to do that, you got to know where you are on the field. Mm-hmm. You got to be really good at situational football. You got to be able to be trusted in that. They've got people who can do it. It's just those people, like a Byron Brown, like some of these receivers and all that, Cole Best on the offensive line, they're surrounded by guys who haven't done it yet. And so it's trying to fuse all that together and bring everybody up.
They can't have pre-snap penalties, things like that that they had in the first scrimmage.
Which it didn't sound like you had that problem yesterday.
We didn't hear that yesterday. 334-321-1390. We'll get one more call before we get to our first break of hour number two. And Jeff is up next. Hey, Jeff.
Hey guys, good afternoon. Staying cool?
In here, yes.
I'm already not looking forward to going back to my car here in a little bit.
No, it's brutal. It's brutal. Hopefully soon it'll be cooling down.
A couple of months.
Yeah, a couple months. Anyway, looks like camp is going well. Bill, I think we've harped on all summer. The key, that O-line, that's where it all begins. Mm-hmm. We're not hearing much about it. I guess that's a good thing.
No, I think that is a good thing. I mean, you're hearing about the battle. You're hearing about the battles inside the battle, specifically at left guard. But it really looks like Jacob Strand is stepping up and going to be tough to push back.
He did say yesterday, though, Jeff, like yesterday, the one positive thing that we heard like wide about the offensive line is he thought they had a really good day in protection, which, again, it's been something that Auburn fans have been crying for help for years.
Oh, yeah. And as you were alluding to a few seconds ago, the red zone, that has been the Achilles heel.
Well,
if you cannot zone block up in that red zone, and we didn't have a quarterback that was a difference maker, that is the key in the red zone.
Well, you've got quite a few things. I mean, you've got multiple big targets at receiver, tight end, and a threat running the ball at quarterback with Byron Brown, as well as your running back.
To Jeff's point, though, I've always thought if you can play true 11-on-11 in the red zone, it changes so much about the way football is played down there.
Yes. Just being out there, the quarterback makes you a threat. And I believe this quarterback will be. I know we don't know until we line up. But just that has been the Achilles heel. No imagination behind that center. That is what doomed us. And if we can do that, if the O-line can just simply block, I think that opens up a lot of windows. I know we don't even talk about the O-line, but let it fail, everything else fails.
You notice, right.
Yep, 100%.
So, yeah. You know, as camp winds down, you know, as I say, it sounds like that's a positive. Coach is not continuing to bring up names and positions on that O-line. So I'm somewhat optimistic that he's pleased with what the progress is up front there with the big uglies, as we say.
Yeah, and I think you go back to spring practices, you heard a lot about Alex Golar saying, man, I don't know what we're going to be like on the offensive line. And
well, just think of the guys they didn't have.
Yeah, and so they're healthier. I think one of the big things we heard yesterday was both of your offensive tackles that you expect to start have been able to go through these scrimmages without any issues, like go all the way through. That's big. Cole Best being a guy who has been in this system before means so much for him at center. But, yeah, it's just –
Cole Skinner is a guy that really has stepped up and looks like he's taken that job at the other guard.
I don't think this is going to be a dominant offensive line, but, like, to Jeff's point, like, do your job and hold up. Yes. Be solid enough. The other thing there is you have a quarterback, like he was saying, when you have a quarterback in Byron Brown, that if things aren't perfect on the offensive line, he can make up for some of that.
Yeah,
and that's
funny.
A huge difference.
It's funny because I saw a couple of reports from Tuscaloosa today about their scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
When Keelan Russell, is going to be the starter, and it's because with questions on the offensive line, he can make plays with his legs.
Yep, absolutely.
And I mean that's exactly right. I mean,
it's what you're lacking.
Byron Brown can help that offensive line be even better.
Tremendously.
Absolutely. With way these defenses are designed, you have to have escapability. You cannot just sit back and be a Joe Montana or that type of person anymore. If we harken back to 2010, Cam has so many breakaway plays. That's what it takes, the breakaway ability, because these defenders, they have speed like running backs. So you have to have escapability. So that alone will make this offense a whole lot better. And, of course, play calling. That
has
doomed us the last couple of years. Just absolute no imagination on offense. And I believe this coach is going to be totally different. I believe his offense is going to be totally different. Of course, it remains to be seen. But I you know what? I until they show me otherwise, I believe it will account for itself.
I agree. I agree. Very, 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 very good points there.
All right, guys. Well, look, we'll wait and see. But that O-line is the key. I know we're looking at everything else. But if our O-line gels, that sets the tone for everything.
Great stuff, Jeff.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, and I go back to that with the offensive line. When you hear Alex Golas talk about wanting to run the ball as much as they do and be violent at the point of attack, can't do that with an offensive line.
No.
You're
not violent at the point of attack if your offensive line isn't.
And my thing with the offensive line is that they are so new and it's kind of makeshift and thrown together. Like, you can't expect miracles from this group, but it's just, can you do your job? Can you do your job?
It's going to – the thing is, if Strand is your left guard, that's a pretty experienced
– very experienced group. And it's
and
just
two
a
of them. Two of them have been playing in this offense for years, and the two Coles, Cole Best and Cole Skinner.
It's about making the best of it, and I think when you talk about potentially playing seven or eight guys up there, rotating those guards a little bit more, I think you're doing that in the hopes of maybe finding guys who can be around for a little bit longer.
Stanton's the only guy that has – an extra year of the guys that right now appear
projected
to be starters.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, make the best of it, set the tone. But, yeah, a lot of it comes down to that offensive line. And it will help that Byron Brown is a guy that can help me make up for it, because defenses have to play differently because of his threat. And also, offensive lines, have a little bit more leeway when that guy's back there. They had a good offensive line at USF, especially by group of five standards, group of six. But it wasn't like they had like SEC talent up front, or these power conference talents up front. But they were pretty effective, including in games against power conference teams. Mm-hmm. So, the scheme's there. The scheme's there. It's just gonna be a matter of finding the right guys to run it.
We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Come on in and join us. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Let's see, Ferg. I wanted to get your thoughts. You mentioned a while ago. I mean, Auburn in the last week has added one of those fifth year guys, both football and basketball. Let's start with basketball with Kobe King. Your thoughts there, and how does he fit, you know, onto this roster?
Gives you more depth at the spot where you probably needed more kind of security, off ball guard, some combo guard ability. He could mm-hmm. he could play the one if you wanted him to.
I had someone you ask, is this a concern about George Kimball's health?
I don't know if it's a concern about George Kimball's health, but I think it's more
policy.
Insurance. Yeah, and again, not don't want to sit here and just like point out certain guys and all that, but even with Kimball healthy, you're in a spot where
you've
that two guard.
Three.
Well, in your two guard spot, you have Kevin Overton, and then you know, there's Kimball, and then it's like Simon Walker, Caleb Williams. I mean, that's a lot of it's right. Unproven. So you get a guy who's got a ton of experience, who's played, you know, five teams in 5 years. That's something that, you know, would trigger some alarm bells for people. But he has been a guy that
he's been at some basketball schools, though.
He's been at some good basketball schools. He's played, you know, he's got plenty of experience. He's been a good shooter everywhere he's been. So he's got that adaptability. I think it's just more of like that kind of cover. We'll see if he'll be able to help. But like, again, that's the one position group. That off-ball guard spot, you know, two and the three, where you say, okay, well, you know, you could use a little help and maybe a little mm-hmm. extra help with the one, too. I wouldn't, you know, necessarily think of it as, you know, oh, they're doubting a guy like George Kimball. I don't think it's that at all. I think it's more of a situation where you've got a lot of inexperience behind him or behind Kevin Overton, mm-hmm. You know, and then I guess you would say Montas at three or Adam Olson at the, like. You need a little bit more depth at your guard spots, and you know he provides that as an easy pickup to make.
Yeah, it was Utah State last year. Was it St. John's, Tulane, Butler, and Utah mm-hmm. State? I think in that order. So
yeah, a lot of bouncing around there. But you know, it's he's a guy that again has been adaptable, and you know you're picking him up late, so you're not expecting him to be a starter or anything like that. But can you?
But there's time.
Can you get some minutes?
But there's still plenty of time. I mean, that's one thing we were talking about the NCAA a while ago, not being in a hurry with making a decision on international players. But there is a little while, at least, you know, to become acclimated.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, it would very much help out because, you know, you don't have a ton of experience back there mm-hmm. in some of those spots on the guards.
All right, and then in football, the
Trey Taylor,
I mean,
Titan.
The you know you we see Bryce Kane working at corner, and then mm-hmm. the next thing Auburn's added a slot guy in Trey Taylor, who was pretty productive at Troy last year.
He was very productive. He is just an outlier. I don't think I've ever seen a skill position player that small at this level.
We were trying to think, you know, about it. You know, people mentioned PPL, Philip Pierre-Louis.
Even still.
I know. They were bigger. They weighed more.
Yeah, Will Hastings.
I mean, even though Auburn listed him at 150, he was listed at 140 at Troy last year, 5'6", and he's little.
He is little.
I said the other – I got the word used the word diminutive. I don't get to say that very much, but, I mean, he's
seen him in person, it's like, wow. That, yeah. I mean, you know.
But, I mean, he made some plays.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Troy. I mean,
he was their number three receiver last year.
I think their number three guy. 30 receptions right at 500 yards.
Had a touchdown against Clemson. Mm-hmm. And he's just might be an outlier. There's a somebody showed me a video, and I put it in the Observer earlier this week, of him dunking at his size.
Wow.
In high school. And it's just like, yeah, he might just be, you know, like that's the thing. It's like when you're that small, that's small anywhere. That's small on a high school team.
It is.
Like that is a small football player. But if he's been able to be productive at the FBS level.
My goodness, he was a JUCO All-American mm-hmm. before he moved up.
And, hey, you get one more year, you know, you get one more year of eligibility and a team says, hey, we'll use you. You want to play in the SEC? Like, go for it. And he's got some value as a punt returner as well. Special teams guy might be interesting to kind of see there. And then was interested. He played JUCO with Champ Anthony for a year.
Right.
So you know, there's some familiarity there. Pretty fun when you move Bryce Kane from slot to corner. You help out your corner depth, but you don't want to completely empty everything out with with your slot depth. So it's just an easy way to just kind of pop him right in there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, making that move this late in camp for Bryce, it's going to be tough.
Feels more like a long-term play. Yeah. Feels like more like a long-term play. If he catches on there, it might be a situation where, hey, maybe you can get some reps. Maybe you can get some
We've seen some guys do it.
Yeah. But it just takes a little while.
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking is this may prepare him more for special teams, being a defensive guy.
That's what I've been thinking about the whole time with him, with this spot. And again, you know, let's see. You're probably not going to get much playing time in the receiver. Mm-hmm. Probably not going to get a ton of time at corner, but there's more of a need at corner right now just because it is a thinner room and you need more guys.
I mean, if he's a possible gunner or something like that on punt cover, he gets to work on his tackling if he's a defensive back.
I think it's a really good idea just to at least try it out and see. And it sounds like from what we heard from Gullish yesterday, he's had a great attitude about it. And he's a great kid. I mean, that's it's a guy that, you know, you want to be safe. And it's happened before. Usually takes some time,
right.
You know, if you want to say Bryce Kane is a contributing cornerback at Auburn, it's probably not going to happen this season, but if he's willing to stay and work it out there, might be the ticket. Like he talked about it in the spring. He just liked being at Auburn. He's the last of those guys that hung around, and it's, you know, even a position change is not throwing him off his stride at this point, which, again, it could be very easy for a guy to be like, I ain't moving positions. I'm going to stay here and be on scholarship, and you can see me in December. You know, in December I'll hit the portal and bye. He's not doing that, though, and I think that speaks volumes about him.
Well, I mean, and that move plus some of the, you know, the inexperience that there is at that position is why I asked Goldish about the corners yesterday.
Yeah, and Gavin Jenkins continuing to be really, really impressive.
Yeah, it sounds like he may be the number three guy.
Sounds like it, especially if Blake Woodby's probably more of a nickel, or at least they're kind of piecing
him. Because I'd sort of figured Blake was the three, and then Gavin maybe was the four, but Gavin's the three.
Gavin's been the guy we've heard about the most, and going back to the spring.
Pushing to be a starter.
And it's like if Shamar Arnaud can get going, you at least know he's got some experience there from what he did at Florida State last season. So got some cover. If you want to be versatile, we would be and move him around a little bit. Because that makes sense with a guy like Woodby.
Yeah, I mean, and it was interesting. I mean, he mentioned Scrap Richardson like after he mentioned Gavin and Shamar.
He was out the other day when we saw him. So.
He was running pretty well out there on the in the heat.
Yeah, so, you know, probably something like
he's another good sized guy. He's a little bigger than you would think.
And he's a guy that's been talked about as being a difference maker potentially on special teams for you. So you like that. Yeah, with Woodby, it's like you got new boy coming back, you got Champ, you have that kind of extra nickel dime option to move around there, and where, you know, if Jenkins is that kind of top guy behind your corner, you can afford to be a little bit more flexible with a guy like Woodby, especially if you can get a guy like Arnaud going.
Yeah, I mean,
then again, you're now at a point saying all that to say this is that you're just an injury or two away from a guy like Bryce Kane being in the mix to potentially help you out or provide that cover that, you know, you don't have to be
a guy that could be number five or six back there.
Right.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Couple of segments left. Plenty of time for you to join us here on the Thursday Drive.
On Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Bill and Justin here this afternoon. Drew at the controls. Again, love for you to join in. Ferg wanted to get – you mentioned you've written about some of the standouts and things like that. Who have – I'll sort of change it just a little bit. Who have been the most pleasant surprises for you here in fall camp? Some guys maybe that you weren't – You weren't expecting to be writing about, talking about that you've seen some things from here in the fall.
Jacob Strand is definitely the number one
question.
Like, I don't think anyone's even close to him.
I didn't have any idea that we'd hear from him this spring.
Like, look, I mean, and no shade towards this guy because I think he's can be in the, you know, be valuable depth for it. But it's like him and Jack Lehrer were kind of in the same boat. And
yeah,
Lehrer's not a guy who you're talking about as a starter, but you are with Strand now, and that stands out to me a lot. I would also throw in, I would also say
Buddy Mathis.
Buddy Mathis is probably that one where it's like, okay, we'll see. You know, like you didn't have.
I knew he was highly touted, but we didn't, you know, this spring it was like, well, he's just sort of out there.
Yeah. After yesterday, and I guess it's been a couple of days, Michael Matthews Caney is now the new one where you're just like, okay, all right, that's something.
That was pretty interesting. I mean, Alex Golish saying, you know, they brought him in for depth, and he's apparently been really good this past week.
Yeah, and that's a player.
He's a big guy out
big
there.
Big guy, linebacker. You know, gives you that extra cover out there. He can also be another, you know, special teams player for you. So, you know, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess Saints the other one too. Where it's just like I just didn't really kind of know.
No, you're right.
Where you kind of fit in there. You got, you know, consistency is going to be a thing, but again, if you're talking about your second or third nose tackle or whatever, just a guy who's in a rotation at the nose, he doesn't have to be all world to help you out a ton.
It's been a camp where I think some of the long shots or chances that Auburn took look like they're panning out. You know, bringing in guys that had been injured. You mentioned Strand and Lair, Arliss Boardingham.
I was really looking forward to watching Arliss Boardingham heading into camp. And, you know, I think Jake Johnson has really established himself as the number one guy, which is to be expected. But, you know, I keep going back to the fact that, like, if you look at Boardingham's Florida stats, like that you just look at him at Florida, and obviously that was a couple years ago, and last year he didn't play at Bowling Green.
Yeah, what? Yeah, I mean, it's like he disappeared.
Yeah, like he got hurt and he could not play at all. But if you would have taken him at Florida, if you had said, hey, Auburn got a tight end from Florida, transfer from Florida who has, you know, 400, 500 yards in his career and so many catches and so many touchdowns.
Six touchdowns, I think.
You'd be doing cartwheels for him. But, you know, since last year he didn't play at Bowling Green, people are like, oh, whatever, you know. It's like, but, no, as a healthy guy, I think he's, you know, right there with Jake Johnson as, you know, a very reliable tight end that you have that established, okay, 1A, 1B, or that 1-2 punch you want there with your vets. Then you can start getting fun with a Trey Newsome or a Jonathan Echols if he gets healthy. Yeah, and so you have that kind of stability and that versatility there.
Yeah, and then, again, not that he seemed like a reach or anything, but obviously things didn't go as well for Bryson Washington this spring. And there were a lot of people wondering, you know, was he somebody that would just sort of fade from the picture? And it's no, he's pushing now, and he's going to be in the rotation.
Yeah, when you hear, you know, Gullis talk about he's looked like the guy he was at Baylor, and it's like, that was one of the best running backs in the Big 12. So, you know, that's a big pickup for him. And you talk about, you know, he said, you know, Gullis just said he wants to have like 3.5. You know, that was the whole thing at the beginning of camp. When you have Cobb and Mabson and now Washington, Nakai Davenport, I think, would be making a bigger push if he was healthy right now. But even if he's not, I've always looked at Nakai Davenport as a guy that can be, if he can be that half where it's just there's a role for him to play, he provides that cover, but I really like him in short yardage, I really like him in red zone. You know, you're in a really good spot at that running back spot with him, especially if Washington's good to go. I think you'd have been fine anyway because I think that Cobb, Mabson, 1-2 punch is really good, but you can never have too many good running backs, and Washington get back in the groove is a great sign for Auburn.
Yeah, so I mean, and a lot of these are part of why when we started the show, I, you know, we were talking about being more optimistic about this team than you were earlier. Oh, yeah. And
not a lot of negatives.
Haven't been. I mean, and probably the one positive that we talked about so much early on, haven't as much lately, but continues to be a positive, Stanton Ramil.
Yeah, that he's out there and he's healthy.
He was, like, in so many folks' eyes, the key. Because he needed to be a starter, even though we thought it was going to be left.
Yeah, and it's like him and Joe Simmons, it's just like you just need them to stay healthy.
Yep.
If they stay healthy.
They're the guys.
Yep, and because past that, it's like you might be able to kick Strand out to tackle and move some things around at guard.
Who's Wilson next?
It's true freshman. It's Wilson, Zaire, and Parker Pritchett. Yeah, so, I mean, again, if those guys are showing that they're ready to be in the two deep right away, that's great. That's awesome.
Oh,
it is. The difference between that and like saying, all right, here you go.
That's great for next year. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Here's your first taste of college football. Go block that kid from Florida. Like, you know, like it's a very different situation there. But, and I think Simmons has been super impressive in camp. Every time I watch him, he's really big guy. And then for Ramil, it's just like I think I'm not expecting him to be firing on all cylinders from the beginning. Might need to knock some of that rust off in actual game mode, but he's in a good spot right now for sure.
Well, the fact that he's been able to complete both scrimmages. Yeah. I mean,
and they've been smart with him. And I think, you know, we talk about it. Nathan and I talked about it on our podcast this morning where it's like, you know, it's so easy this time of year where you can get wrapped up in the day to day and just be like, oh, so-and-so wasn't out there today. Oh, gosh. Or, oh, so-and-so was with the third team today. What does that mean? It's like, it's less about that.
Yeah,
more
Cody
about,
Sigler's with the third team. Yeah. Stanton Ramil's not out there. It's like
it's more about patterns, right? And the pattern with Ramil this fall has been let's see what it looks like when we're going scrimmage wise and we're doing situational stuff. We're doing 11-on-11 stuff,
and let's get him to September 5th.
Yeah,
pitch as close count, to 100% as you can.
Let's keep him on a pitch count for all the other stuff, and you know, it seems to have worked. And like, look, they've done that with other guys. Like, you know, when there were several key guys we didn't see earlier, or you know, on I guess that would have been Tuesday. There are several key guys we didn't see on Tuesday. Wouldn't mean that they were hurt. Wouldn't mean they're out. It's just
right.
Like, you kind of know. Like, at this point, he kind of said it yesterday. At this point, you can kind of put Jeremiah Cobb in bubble wrap and just be like, all right, bud, we'll see you. We'll see you against Baylor. Like, still get work, still be able to rep, but, like, you don't want to push that too hard. Because the last thing you want to do is you're right before the season starts and it's like, yep, well, he got hurt. And, you know, we're right here at the edge of the season. It's about, for a lot of those experienced guys, those guys you know are going to be key players, just get them healthy and get them into the season.
Also says a lot about Cody Sigler that they didn't need him yesterday. Didn't hope nope. that, you know, held him out.
Yeah. Really, I mean, and I think the thing with Sigler is just that, you know, he's been so impressive from the moment he stepped on a campus.
Oh, yeah.
You know what you got in him. You absolutely know what you got in him.
334-321-1390, the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. Bill, I'm glad you said that because that's kind of what I was feeling. I think the difference is, I know the one caller was being all negative, and you know we're just a sorry team for the last 5 years, which, you know, that's not, almost a couple of wins away from being stuck with those two coaches.
The point is, don't feel like you're entitled to 10 wins this year. I mean, it's just there.
No, I'm not sit here. It's kind of like when you have a decent basketball team and you're like, okay, well, you know, we could win. We could be great, but a point guard, or you don't have a big guy like Jani Broome, then, I mean, you just got to be realistic. But, I mean, we have, you know, the guy that led the nation in offense last year, I'm pretty sure, or second.
I think he was second.
And the second highest offense, you know, coaches. I mean, you're bringing that in, and then y'all mentioned the scheduling. We are definitely, you know, the other teams, they don't have the quarterbacks, the ones in the early in the season. So we've got some advantages, and then you got to look at our kicking. Our kicking is definitely good. I mean, for above, you know, the special teams kicking, I think field goals. So where are our weaknesses? You're bringing back a lot of the defense. Your same defensive coordinator. Guys have gotten better in certain positions. So I feel like you don't think the defense is going to go back. And then you look at the schedule last year. The teams that we're going to lose these games. Well, we were within a touchdown of Alabama to the very end of the game, and we should have beat Georgia. So, I mean, all of a sudden we're just going to be terrible. And look at all the teams. Okay, you got Vanderbilt, you got Indiana, you got Ole Miss. What happened when a really good coach went there? Well, not coach, but, you know, a quarterback and a coach went there.
Yeah, right, a system, and he brought a lot of his players with him from James
right.
Madison.
That's right, and so you get a good system, a good coach, good offensive system, and bring in a good quarterback that's been in that system, and then there you go. You can make a big turnaround. I mean, we really don't need a lot to make a turnaround. I mean, because we should have won a lot of those games last year. So to me, I think to be negative is almost you're trying to be negative with the way this is all panning out. I mean, everything. When we picked Alex Gullis, I literally did not know him from the hill of beans. And I was, you know who I wanted. I wanted Lane Kiffin, and I just wanted somebody that I knew was going to be good. But I feel better with what we have. I really do. And I think he's done all the right things, pushed all the right buttons, got everybody talking the right things. And Byron Brown is a very positive, charismatic person. It's like everything he does, it's not about me. None of it is about me. And I think that is a big deal. That is a big deal. It kind of reminds me of Cam Newton. Cam Newton wasn't all me, but or Nick Marshall, both of them. They were about winning, about the team winning. And I think that's what this is about, is a team. I can't win by myself. Cam would be like, I'll do everything I can, but we need to be a team. And that's kind of what I felt, and I same thing with Nick Marshall. He was a magician, but you got a guy like that can take you, that can win you single handedly, can win you a game. I think that kind of raises your potential ceiling big time. And I think to sit here and assume, if you made me have to bet $1 million that we were going to go either win 9 games or 7 games, I would take 9. I literally would if I had to bet my money. I would bet 9 before I would bet 7. Now, I'm not saying that we can't, couldn't happen, but just the way things are going, we have a chance to start out good. And we get 3 wins, 4 wins, we're 4-0, going to Tennessee, we come back 5-0. That changes everything in my mind.
No question. One thing I did want to say to J-Bag is just because Auburn didn't do it the last couple of years doesn't mean that that's the way it's got to be this year. Because, so much that is different. And Ferg, you can talk about this. The mindset of this team is different. They haven't played. Now, they go out and lose, that could have a lot to do with it. But right now, I think you said this a while ago, this is a confident group right now heading into the season.
Yeah, I know. They've got the confidence because I think they see what they're capable of, and they're doing it in practice. And I think for those guys, especially those USF guys, they know what this thing can really look like when it's clicking. I think on the defensive side, I think you should have that kind of confidence because it's a DJ Durkin defense, and there's a good number of these guys who have been in it before and knows what it looks like when they're firing on all cylinders. So yeah, it's a good confidence. And I think the other thing that really animates this team that that shouldn't get overlooked is there's a bunch of guys on this team that weren't necessarily SEC quality dudes right out of high school. They've had to work and fight and claw their way to get this point. They want to show that they belong. Mm-hmm. They don't want to think that, these are a bunch of USF dudes. These are a bunch of Group of Five guys. These are guys who are rentals.
They're not guys that are just here for the money.
Yeah, these bridges to the future and all that. No, it's these are guys that I think are going to play with that kind of chip on their shoulder and kind of prove themselves. I think it starts from the top down, though, because I think your head coach has a lot of that to him as well.
I agree.
Yeah, well, I mean, 2010, weren't we terrible in 2009? And then 2013, weren't we terrible in 2012?
Well, terrible in 2012, terrible in 2008.
Yeah.
And
nine, you had taken that step forward a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were like an 8-win team in 2009.
Take 3 years. It didn't take 3 years for Indiana.
No,
take 3 years for Vanderbilt.
It is funny Auburn has been the team that hasn't taken long to restart, and now you're in an era where it's easier to restart, which makes it really interesting to see what this year could end up looking like.
Exactly. All right, thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, Pat. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
On ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the drive here on this Thursday. Fun show today. I do want to let you know, Thursdays should be in a couple of weeks. We're going to get David Paschal back with us from the Chattanooga Times Free Press doing his show up there in Chattanooga. So looking forward to getting him back.
I thought you were about to say, you got to remember Tiger Talk's now on Wednesday.
Tiger Talk will be on Wednesdays.
It's a shift.
I think that's what Alex Golish wanted. I mean,
Sure.
I'm sure there is a strategic reason for that. He doesn't do anything, it doesn't seem,
that's why press conference is
without there being, without there being a reason for it.
Yep. That's why press conferences are still on Monday. That's what they were doing at USF. We're going to keep it rolling.
Like I said earlier, I mean, he keeps doing things, and then you understand. It was funny when we had Andy on. We were talking about some of these things he's done, the mock game week, where we've seen game day walkthroughs and things like that. I don't recall a mock game week.
Might as well just go ahead and go through all this. What Monday's going to look like, this is what Tuesday's going to look like. Yeah, might as well do it.
But Andy said that was a great point, and he took it down and said that's going to be one of the first questions he asks Alex Golish is, where did he get some of these ideas? Because they're really interesting, and they're the kind of ideas that when you hear them, you go, yeah, that makes sense. Why isn't everybody doing it? Why haven't we been doing it?
Well, I mean, look at last season, do you remember what USF opened the year with last year?
It was Florida was early, but Florida wasn't the first game. It was somebody that was supposed to be really good.
Boise.
Boise, that's right.
They played Boise at home and beat them 34-7.
Yep.
And so, I wouldn't be surprised if they did that kind of situation where they had that extended prep. Year before that, they opened the year with, Bethune-Cookman, That was it. I'm trying to look at what his openers are.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, when you've got a bunch of new guys and you want them to know exactly, here's what we do, here's what you need to be doing for this first game. Because after the first game, it'll be, all right, we're going to do what we did last week.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, always good when you have so many new pieces and you're so new. Also with Baylor, it's like they're so much new at Baylor now that, like, any extra help that you can get and any extra time you can to prepare for them. Brand new quarterback, brand new defense pretty much from top to bottom. So get to get the job. And you're already done doing camp. You're already going to be prepping for the game anyway. Might as well just take it to, okay, this is what this game's going to look like. This is what game week's going to look like.
Get it where you're not thinking as much, where you're just reacting and playing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ferg, before we run out of time, again, let everybody know about the Observer, what you know, what's out there, what's coming up, and how they can get it if they don't.
Yeah, auburnobserver.com. Check it out. You know, everything we do gets sent straight to your email inbox when we write it, or we do it on the podcast side. So it's been a lot of practice and scrimmage updates, a lot of notebooks, a lot of info from what we've been getting from Auburn football practice these last few days. We'll do that again tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow we get Brad Williams and DVD.
Yep.
Is that right?
And so we'll get some linebackers and some corners with that. So a lot of good stuff there at the Observer. Podcast also out today with Nathan King. You can check that out, auburnobserver.com.
All right. Great stuff again, Ferg. Appreciate it. We'll see you over there tomorrow. That's going to wrap things up. Speaking of tomorrow, don't forget The Drive as well as On the Line coming to you from Winter Timber Outdoors over right next to the Walmart Marketplace across from the mall. So stop by and join us if you can. Coach Don Dunn and I will be with you tomorrow at 4. That's going to do it for the Thursday edition of The Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.